Since 2011, politicians have passed more than 400 abortion restrictions. For many women, it's extremely difficult to access services. We often hear that abortion is one of the most divisive issues of our time. But according to many polls, 70% of the population does not want Roe overturned. On today's Your Call, we are talking about the future of abortion rights. How are organizations and everyday citizens fighting to keep abortion safe and legal? Join us after the news. Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Immediately after Justice Anthony Kennedy announced his retirement, many wondered, what is in store for Roe v. Wade? That question and fear comes at a time when abortion access is already under attack in many states across the country. According to the Guttmacher Institute, 23 states have laws that regulate abortion providers and go beyond what is necessary to ensure patient safety. The Center for Reproductive Rights reports that just 9 states have constitutional protections for abortion. 4 states have trigger bans, which would activate as soon as Roe v. Wade were overturned. So what will happen to abortion rights if Brett Kavanaugh becomes a Supreme Court justice? Today, we are joined by two guests. Julie Burkhart is founder and CEO of Trust Women, an organization dedicated to opening clinics, providing abortion care in underserved communities. Julie Burkhart worked side by side with Dr. George Tiller. He was assassinated by an anti-abortion extremist in his Kansas church on May 31st, 2009. Hi, Julie. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you so much.
Good morning. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We're also joined by Lazi Dua Salazar. Lazi Dua serves on the board of Access Women's Health Justice. It's an organization that provides information and practical support to women on all aspects of reproductive health in California. And Lazi Dua joins us in studio. Hi, Lazi Dua. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Well, I want to first ask you both about where we are right now. Something that just always strikes me, and this happens on a regular basis, is you hear in the media that abortion is one of the most divisive issues of our time. But if you look at the polling from Wall Street Journal, Kaiser, Reuters, Politico, so many polls find that 70% of the population does not want Roe to be overturned. So, Julie, why is it that we hear abortion is so divisive that it's framed as if half the country believes it should be legal and half doesn't, but the polling shows that 70% of the population does not want Roe overturned?
Well, thank you. For decades now, abortion has been used as a political football, if you will. It's been political fodder. It's been a way in which, since Roe v. Wade was handed down in 73, if you look at the late 70s, you see the rise of the anti-choice movement. And they have dovetailed that in with the evangelicals, in with the Catholic Church, and moved into and taken over the Republican Party, which was a movement in the 80s and 90s. And it's been a way in which, in terms of using that political football to use their broader and push their broader agenda forward. This has nothing to do with abortion. This has everything to do with who is going to hold the power in the United States of America.
And Lazi Dua, what would you add? Why is it that we are told that this is such a divisive issue when the majority of the population supports Roe, and the only reason why so many of these extreme laws are on the books is because politicians have passed them. When these issues go to the voters, even in conservative parts of the country like South Dakota and Colorado, the voters almost always say no. So why is it that it's framed this way in the media?
As Julie mentioned, it's an easy way to mobilize their base. It's a wedge issue, and it keeps people engaged in the conservative politics. I think one of the things that we can't forget to mention is that we cannot talk about abortion restriction and abortion rights without talking about white supremacy. And it has very little to do with actually whether or not people are quote-unquote pro-life. As Julie mentioned, it has to do with who's in power. And white conservatives are super scared of being the ethnic minority. This is why they need to control women's bodies. This is why they can't keep allowing women to have abortions.
Well, and we'll bring up the economic justice and the racial aspects of this, because in places like Mississippi, there's just one clinic. And for women who have access, who have the means, they're always going to have access. But for poor women, it's incredibly difficult. Let's talk a little bit more about this, because I think it deserves so much more attention. If you look at all of the restrictions that have been passed, the majority of these restrictions have been passed because politicians have voted on these laws, have voted to pass these. But when you take these issues to the people, I remember what happened in, Colorado, South Dakota, and Mississippi. A variety of laws, propositions went to the voters, and the voters said no. So can you talk about that, Julie? It's really important to make that distinction, that these laws are passing because politicians are passing them. But when you take these issues to the voters, they almost always say they don't want these laws.
Correct. If you look at the laws that have been passed and put on the books in a variety of states across this country, starting with, say, the late 80s, when we started to see anti-choice laws becoming more and more prevalent, you will see that even though these laws have gone on the books, abortion has not become any safer. We know that with a first trimester abortion, there's less than one half of 1% that a woman will experience, that a person will experience a complication. And I cannot say that that statistic has changed since, say, 1988. So it's a strategy by the right wing, by the anti-choice movement, to chip away at reproductive rights and health care so that it makes it harder and harder and harder for women and all people to access that care.
Since 2011, politicians have passed more than 400 abortion restrictions, and we've done many shows looking at how difficult it is for women, even in what we consider a safe state like California, to access abortion, especially in rural areas, or if funding is an issue, it's incredibly difficult. So, Julie, it's hard to wrap your head around 400 restrictions. What really concerns you the most at this point?
Well, at this point, where we see the abortion desert, as we call it, which is largely the Midwest and the South, and also, as you just referenced, in states that have good protections, good laws on the books for citizens, you still get into these rural areas where people find it challenging to access care because of lack of providers and people still being politically hostile to reproductive health care. But in these states where there are no constitutional protections, where you have legislatures that are intent on restricting abortion even further, if we do see a further rollback of abortion rights at the federal level, It makes me wonder what people will be facing in places where, you know, we have clinics in Kansas, Oklahoma, and Washington State. What will people be facing? What further hardships will they have to overcome in order to access reproductive health care in those parts of the country if we have hostile legislatures, if we have a hostile judiciary? What does that mean for people?
And Laji Dwa, how do you see this coming down? Because so many people are asking what's in store for Roe, and there's all kinds of theories out there that you'll get a conservative state passing a law and legislators know that it's unconstitutional. And so a pro-choice group will sue, the Supreme Court will take the case, and possibly they will say that that law is constitutional. I mean, how do you see this coming down? This is what everybody's wondering. Is Roe v. Wade going to be overturned? Do you think that it might?
It's a large possibility. I do think that one of the things that we do have to give to the current president is that he's kept most of his campaign promises. And abortion has been one of the things that he said that he would focus on and overturn Roe v. Wade. So I don't doubt that that is definitely in the works. I do think that one of the things that we have to think about is that it's there's a lot of conversations about us going back to back alley days, pre Roe v. Wade. Things have shifted a lot. We have a lot more information, a lot more access to alternative methods. Self-induced abortions is something that doesn't look like it did in the 70s. And access to probably ordering medication for medical abortion is something that will probably shift the way that that looks, but it is scary. It will be specifically dire for people who are already dealing with barriers to access to abortion, specifically low-income women, people who are undocumented, people on Medi-Cal. So the people who are already having issues with access will find it increasingly more difficult. As you mentioned, there are states that have constitutional protection of abortion. For those states, such as California, we'll probably see an influx of folks who are coming in from neighboring states to receive the services that they need. Because again, you can ban abortion, but you can ban legal abortion, but you're not going to stop it from happening.
Right.
People will find ways to get the health care that they need.
Right. And Laji Dwa, based on the conversations that you're all having, you know, some legal experts say that if Roe were overturned, abortion would be illegal in 20 states across the country, while others say with this group of conservatives in power, they will go after all 50 states. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it will be more difficult to do it across all 50 states. Just using California as an example, we have not only do we have a strong constitutional protection, we also have a very active base where we're making sure that folks have better access. For example, Access has co-sponsored Bill SB 320, which would allow four-year colleges, public colleges, to provide medical abortions for students. So we're in the states where there's already a constitutional protection, it will be a lot more difficult for these types of restrictions to take place. I think the biggest concern are the states that are already, as Julie mentioned, the abortion desert. They're already dealing with ongoing restrictions. They're already dealing with lack of access to services because clinics have to close based on regulations. So if Roe v. gets overturned, then they're the ones that are going to be suffering the most.
Julie, how do you see this playing out?
Well, I did want to point out that lately, after Kennedy announced his retirement, that the online search for do-it-yourself abortions skyrocketed. I don't have the percentage, but it's really gone off the charts. And so I think people are very concerned about their rights and what they're going to be able to access or not. And, you know, you're absolutely correct that, you know, the states that protect people's right to abortion care are largely on the coast. And so in looking at that desert area in the center of the country and down into the southeast, it's going to be more and more challenging for people to access abortion care. I mean, we have four states that say that, well, they do have on the books trigger laws, you know, North Dakota, South Dakota, Louisiana, and Mississippi, that automatically, if Roe falls, those states will automatically ban abortion outright. I think it is imperative at this point in time, being up against these political anti-choice extremists, that we work even harder at the state level in these places, well, all 50 states, but in particular in these states where the legislatures are, you know, hell-bent on banning abortion. So having strategies for bringing potential lawsuits, potentially passing legislation that we can, but really working diligently at the state level as well.
Julie Burkhart is founder and CEO of Trust Women, an organization dedicated to opening clinics providing abortion care in underserved communities. Julie worked side by side with Dr. George Tiller, who was assassinated in his Kansas church in 2009. L'Ajidois Salazar serves on the board of Access Women's Health Justice. They provide information and practical support, even finding women a place to stay if they have to travel long distances to receive reproductive health care in the state of California. And today we are talking about what is in store for Roe v. Wade. This is a very serious question. We need to now think about what happens if Roe is overturned. What'll happen in very conservative states where, in Mississippi, for example, there's only one clinic, and this clinic is always under attack. The people who work there tend to take different routes to the clinic because they are afraid of what might happen to them. This is just a daily reality for so many people who work at clinics across the country. And we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on this? If you remember what life was like before Roe v. Wade, I know so many of you have fought for years to ensure that we have access to safe and legal abortion. What are your thoughts about where we are right now? It's kind of even surreal to be asking these questions. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. L'Ajidois, of course, when you hear about these conversations in the media, they tend to frame it as who's ahead and who's behind. And so one other question that's being asked is, will the Republican Party really go this far? Because they will lose a lot of women. In fact, there's an organization called Republican Majority for Choice, and this is a group of pro-choice Republican women. And just last month, they wrote an op-ed in the New York Times called Why We Are Leaving the GOP. It took someone like a Donald Trump to get them to leave their party. So a lot of people say they might not go as far as losing a lot of women, but what we will see is now with Trump and with Brett Kavanaugh on the courts, extreme politicians will be even more empowered to continue chipping away at abortion access. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think their stance on abortion was very clear when the Trump's stance on abortion was very clear when they were running, and still 53% of Republican women voted for him, or rather 53% of white women voted for him. So I don't know that overturning Roe v. Wade would actually impact his base. I also think that they have done such a good job of testing out how restrictive they can be at the state level, and now this is the big show. This is where they get to test out whether they can do it at the federal level. I don't doubt that this is what they're actually going to go for. Will it happen in this cycle? I'm not sure. Maybe this is how he gets reelected, but I don't doubt that this is definitely something that's in the works.
Julie, what are your thoughts? And just to remind everyone, I mean, in the year 2018, this is where we're at. During the 2016 presidential election, every Republican running opposed abortion, and they were clashing over whether there should be exceptions for rape and incest. I mean, this is how far this party has moved to the right, that every single Republican running for president opposed abortion, and the idea of exceptions for rape and incest was actually a debate.
Well, that's a good question. You know, I remember the days, this is when I was lobbying, when there was actually a pro-choice Republican group that you could actually lobby on abortion rights. And so we've come quite a ways nationally in the last 20 years when you look at that structure within the Republican Party.
Right. Pardon and we me. Should add that George H.W. Bush was referred to as Rubbers because, I mean, he was such a family planning champion. This was George H.W. Bush.
Well, part of me wonders that the Republican Party is going to become so extreme and they're going to push the party so far to the right that it might actually implode. And I keep thinking that the vision I always have in my head when it comes to Trump and, you know, AOL is, you know, these angry white men who are intent on keeping their power hanging by their fingertips from a big cliff. And that at some point, you know, reason will set in and we will be able to shift the political dynamic back to the center. And I think that we've seen some evidence of that. But I don't think it's going to be immediate.
Lajidwa, what are your thoughts on that?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Well, we were just talking about how far to the right the Republican Party has moved. And Julie, well, who knows what's going to happen, but she thinks that if they do go this far, this is what will really push the party over the cliff to the point where it'll start to really break at the seams.
I'm not really sure. I think until it starts impacting their base, they're not going to really start thinking about it. We're under an administration that will detain pregnant immigrants and refuse health care, and right. This leads to miscarriages. I don't really think that they're largely concerned with women or with people's health and their access to health care. It's a wedge issue, and until their base starts suffering and their base starts complaining, then it'll become an issue. I don't think that they can potentially, like I've said, when these laws begin to restrict access to abortions, the first people who feel it are low-income people, people that are on Medicaid, undocumented people. This is not their base. And they're not, their base is not going to feel it initially. When people talk about pre-Roe time, they mention how they would go to Mexico for abortions. Abortion is illegal in Mexico. With the right amount of money, you can get the health care that you need. It's not until it starts impacting their base that it will become an issue for them.
Well, let's take a call before we go to break. Let's hear from Judy in Berkeley. Hi, Judy. Welcome to the show.
Okay, thanks. Rose, I thought I heard you say at the beginning of the program, you asked the guest, why does the media frame it as much more 50-50 than it really is, because it has much more support than that? And I didn't hear an answer to that. I heard an answer about why the right wing wants to get it out there in that way, but not why the media goes along with that.
Well, I'll ask our guests after the break, and let me ask you, Judy, why do you think the media frame it this way? Did we lose Judy? All right. Well, I'll ask our guests after the break. I think one of the reasons is because the people with the loudest voice who say the most outlandish things tend to get the microphone. And the media talk to a bishop, and then they might talk to Planned Parenthood, and there's your 50-50 balance. I mean, this is what happens on a regular basis. But only now with Justice Kennedy retiring and so many people saying what's in store for Roe, we are finally hearing on a regular basis that 70% of the population actually does not want Roe to be overturned. And that is the topic of our conversation today with Julie Burkhart, founder of Trust Women, and Laji Dwa Salazar. She serves on the board of Access. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
And this is 91.7 KALW San Francisco. This is Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK, toll free. You can also send an email at yourcall@kalw.org or post a comment or question at the show's website. That's yourcallradio.org. Or tweet us at yourcallradio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about the Trump administration's trade war. The U.S. has imposed tariffs of 25% on steel, 10% on aluminum, and in response, a number of countries, including Mexico and Canada, have imposed taxes on more than $24 billion of U.S. exports. The Trump administration say that these tariffs and changes to various trade agreements will create jobs, but economists say we could lose hundreds of thousands of jobs. What is actually happening on the ground? And then on Wednesday, we'll talk about whether the Democratic Party can be reformed from within. The victory of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has a lot of people now running as Democratic Socialists. Do you think that Democratic Socialists who run and maybe become members of Congress or state senators, do you think that they can actually change the corporate wing of the Democratic Party? That's on Thursday. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we are talking about what is in store for Roe v. Wade, especially if Brett Kavanaugh becomes a Supreme Court justice. Abortion is already under attack across the country. So many women and girls, especially low-income, undocumented, and people on Medi-Cal and Medicaid, have a really hard time accessing services, even in a safe place state like California. Women have to travel many hours, and they work with Access, for example, to find places where they can spend the night. I mean, it's really hard to even get access in safe states like California. Laji Dwa Salazar serves on the board of Access Women's Health Justice. They're based in Oakland, California. And Julie Burkhart is founder and CEO of Trust Women, an organization dedicated to opening clinics providing care in underserved communities. Before the break, Judy wanted us to revisit this question. Why is it that the media frames this as the most divisive issue of our time and will bring on a bishop and maybe someone from Planned Parenthood and doesn't really let listeners know until now that 70% of the population actually does not want Roe v. Wade overturned? And the reason why we have these extreme laws on the books is because politicians pass them, but when they go to the people, even in places like South Dakota, they vote no. Julie, do you want to revisit that question? Because when we're talking about whether abortion is going to be illegal in 20 states, it's just a really important issue to talk about.
And you are talking about the media question.
The media.
Right.
Yes. Why do they frame this as a 50-50 issue?
Yes, and I think that you all are right, that it's, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And I can't tell you how many times I've gone to members of the media and asked that they report a certain story. And I've been told that they cannot take that on because they don't have somebody from the other side to balance that out. So I think that's exactly right. And so it's the squeaky wheel that there's got to be the 50-50, and there are always two sides to that coin, which my argument is, on one side, our side, we are healthcare providers and we are advocates of social justice for all people in this country. And the folks on the other side know nothing about healthcare, actually are incredibly misleading, and only want to bring harassment, intimidation, and violence to people's lives.
Julie, have you seen this in the media over the last couple of decades, or would you say this is in the last decade? I mean, how has the coverage really changed, if at all?
Well, just off the top of my head, I would say that the coverage has not changed much. Now, I would take that with a grain of salt. Not something I've spent a lot of time thinking about. But here's something that I always notice and have noticed for years and years now. When a member of the media is reporting on abortion, what do you see? You see the medical staff, and then you see a picture of a woman's swollen belly at probably 8 to 9 months pregnant. That is what we see on the news when predominantly mainstream media are reporting on abortion. So what does that tell people? That tells people that when we're talking about abortion, we're talking about women in their third trimester, by and large, receiving abortion care in this country, which is absolutely not the case. And so, you know, that visual, in my mind, is very misleading to the public.
Mm. And what would you add, Laji Dwa?
I mean, I think Julie has it right. It's been very misleading. They don't cover facts often when they talk about abortion restriction. It makes for better TV, doesn't it? It does. It makes it more interesting. That's part of the reason why I think that they don't actually report facts, that they don't actually state that most people, even the people who would say things like, I would personally not get an abortion, believe that it's not their right to decide over anybody else's bodies. So I think it just makes for better television. It's part of the reason why Trump got so much airtime, right? It's interesting. It's sometimes easier to report what's going to be sensational rather than the facts, rather than, as Julie stated, most abortions happen within the first 10 weeks. And it's easier to talk about how these laws are about safety, when in reality, getting a root canal has more complications than having an abortion.
Right. And also, whenever we do shows about abortion, we talk about words because they really matter. And you hear the media say pro-life, pro-life over and over again, even though the Republican Party almost always votes against basic social programs, healthcare, things that would actually be, quote, pro-life. And NPR had a really interesting piece about this by then ombudswoman Alicia Shepard back in 2010. And Alicia wrote about the fact that a lot of listeners wrote in and said, I cringe when I hear NPR use the term pro-life. What does this really mean? And she said NPR should stick to more neutral terms such as anti-abortion and abortion rights rather than loaded language like pro-life. And NPR's managing editor reviewed the policy, and they decided that they were going to use those terms, anti-abortion and abortion rights. Anything to add on that, Laji Dwa, just the importance of the wording that's used?
It
and
is
how
super,
that shapes opinion?
Yeah, it is super important that we talk about very specifically what they're trying to do. They're trying to limit access to healthcare. They're trying to control people's bodies. It has nothing to do with being pro-life. The same people that are trying to push for anti-abortion legislation are the people who are detaining children at the border, who are, again, denying healthcare to pregnant people who they're detaining, which leads to miscarriages. They're the same people who pass coercive laws that end up with mass incarceration. So it's not about life. It's not about protecting anyone's life. It's about controlling people's bodies.
Lajidwa Salazar serves on the board of Access Women's Health Justice, an Oakland-based organization that provides a variety of support services to women on all aspects of reproductive health. And Julie Burkhart is founder and CEO of Trust Women, an organization dedicated to opening clinics providing abortion care in underserved communities. And Dr. George Tiller used to say, "Trust women." He had a button that said "Trust women." And George Tiller was assassinated by an abortion extremist in his Wichita, Kansas church in 2009. Today, we're talking about the future of abortion rights in the United States with a conservative like Brett Kavanaugh if he becomes a Supreme Court justice. What questions or comments do you have? How are you thinking about this issue? If you remember what life was like before abortion was legal, we'd love to hear from you. And what do you think are the best ways for everyday citizens to really fight to ensure that abortion is safe and legal in this country? According to the statistics from the Guttmacher Institute, 70,000 women die around the world from unsafe abortions. Let's go next to Nancy in Berkeley. Hi, Nancy. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Yes, I've been thinking about this a lot. I'm 79, so I definitely remember what it was like without Roe versus Wade. It was horrific. I had friends who had illegal abortions, one who almost died. I had friends who went to Mexico. We were all young and, you know, didn't want children at that time, and if we were sexually active and missed a period, we were hysterical because we thought, oh gosh, what happens if we're pregnant? It was a terrible, terrible time. I marched in the streets. It was scary. And I have a 17-year-old granddaughter, and I said to her, I said, it's going to be up to you kids to do something about this. I said, we're old and tired of marching, and we've done it, and now, you know, you have to take up the torch and do something about it. It's not that I'm not going to do something about it, but I just cannot believe that in 2018 this is happening to us, because it's not the only thing that's happening to us. It's extremely disturbing.
Nancy, that was one of the questions I was going to ask you. I mean, you're a regular caller to the show. You have such amazing history. I mean, you've gone through so much, and I just wondered, did you ever think we'd get to this place in 2018? Ireland has spent so many years relaxing their abortion laws. It's legal again in Ireland, and that happened because a woman died from a botched abortion. So you just said you can't believe we're here, but how do you think, Nancy, how do you think we got to this point?
I think, well, we got to this point because of the tenor of the United States. We've just gone, you know, there's been small groups of people like the Tea Party or the evangelicals who have just gotten a foothold in Congress because people haven't been paying attention. People have become, you know, complacent about, you know, they've been, you know, concerned about, you know, their families and their jobs, which, you know, the unions have dissipated. This abortion struggle is just one of many things that have happened because people, as I said, haven't been paying attention or enough attention to what's been going on in the country. You know, one thing at a time, and then everything has just kind of mushroomed. And, I mean, that's the way I feel. The conservatives, right wings, have just little by little been taking over our government and the media and, you know, huge conglomerations. And the Supreme Court certainly has done their part. I mean, saying corporations are people. And we've just been losing it piece by piece. And we've, you know, I mean, I remember when Obama was running and a lot of people were so excited, you know, he was going to do something. I didn't feel that way. I felt that he was, you know, a nice guy, probably should have been president of a university, but it's the lack of courage. I mean, I think Barbara Lee, who is our rep, has done a lot. She's in there fighting all the time, but she's just one person, and we've just elected the wrong people.
Well, Nancy, thank you so much. Yeah. No, thank you so much, and thank you for always calling in.
Sure.
Let's thank you. Let's go next to KDF in Oakland. Hi, KDF. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Rose, so much. Listen, this is another subject that's under the category of if men got pregnant, abortion would be a sacrament. The reason that we're refighting this is because it's basic. So when men were able to get their Viagra paid for by the federal government, then people even in progressive states like California said, well, women should be able to get birth control pills. And Jerry Brown turned that down. Okay? So what we're dealing with is power. The only way women can be defeated is if we're crippled by not being able to make our own choices about our bodies. And that's why we're fighting this. It's the same thing that we were fighting in 1974 when we established Plexus West Coast Women's Press. We need to recognize that the patriarchy is vicious and will do anything to try to keep women down. Anything.
Well, thank you for calling in, KDF. Laji Dwa, you are on the board of Access Women's Health Justice. How are you all planning to respond? I mean, you're already responding to the ongoing attacks and just, in many cases, trying to ensure that women in California have a place to stay if they have to travel to get an abortion. But overall, how do you think nonprofits, clinics, everyday citizens should respond? If, you know, Brett Kavanaugh, for example, becomes a Supreme Court justice and Roe is, in fact, if we might see Roe overturned, what do you think will be most effective?
I think ongoing organizing to make sure that we keep putting laws in the book that protect abortion rights is important. If you're not, and I know that California is a quote unquote safe state, right? But if you're in other states, connect with your local abortion fund. It's not just about the providers, but also who's filling in the gaps when people can't get access to abortion. Because, like you said, some people have to travel, getting funds. Having an abortion a week later can vary, cost upwards of thousands of dollars. And so it's super important that folks continue to support abortion work, both providers and abortion funds, but also stay informed. Like, as you mentioned, a lot of these things don't go to votes because legislation just kind of passes it. I would caution people for waiting for there to be a law that they have to be against. Rather, envision the world that we want to see and push for legislation that will protect people's access to abortion.
And what would you add, Julie?
Well, I would say that what we really need now more than ever is political leadership. If you look at what happened in this country in the 90s in particular, politicians were afraid to even utter the word abortion. And what we need now more than ever are candidates, elected officials who are going to step forward and talk very openly about people's need for abortion care. Also, I would say we are getting ready to enter our fourth phase of our voter ID work that we do in both Oklahoma and Kansas. And this is where we have both volunteer and paid canvassers that go out into targeted areas of the state and talk to people right on their doorsteps about access to abortion, but also what that means if we don't have access to abortion, what that means for maternal health care, what that means for childhood health care, and how the how one's access to abortion care relates to all other reproductive health care and the health care that people receive for their children. And I must say that we have had just an amazing response. You know, it seems a little counterintuitive that we're going out to and actually rural areas of both Kansas and Oklahoma and talking with folks on their doorstep. But I think that that is helping, I hope, to break down those barriers and for people to see that, you know, just because we might be in a more politically, you know, conservative, conventional, traditional area, that people still feel the same way when it comes to reproductive health care.
Mm. Well, thank you for the phone call. Let's go next to Jennifer in Albany. Hi, Jennifer. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thank you so much for having this show. I'd like to start by saying we need to fight Kavanaugh, because this POTUS has not earned his right to appoint. It looks like his entire administration got in illegally. And I think as far as the reason why people like my mom have changed from pro-choice Republicans to anti-choice is because of false and misleading information. I remember when she changed her mind, and I remember asking her why, and she gave me some story that did not make sense because the timing didn't make sense. I remember when she changed her mind, it was when George W. Bush was in the White House. And it was because of this late-term abortion that they were calling partial birth abortion. And we on the left really missed the ball when we let all of this, like NPR's claiming people are pro-life, like you guys said earlier on the show, it's not pro-life. We haven't stood up to say that this is false and misleading information. This is not what late-term abortion is about. Another family member of mine allowed his wife to have an abortion in spite of the fact that he's a fundamentalist Christian and has been against abortion his entire life. So it's really interesting how when it's in their own backyard, they understand the need. And I'd like to add that without Planned Parenthood, I would have never had any health insurance throughout my entire 20s and 30s. And it's ironic that the people who are government out of my life, Tea Partiers, are more than willing to let the government pay for their womb and their uterus.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. You bring up a lot of points there. Julie, do you want to comment just briefly on late-term abortion? I think Jennifer makes such a good point because there's an amazing documentary, and we did a show about it called After Tiller. And in the documentary, a number of couples who have late-term abortions are interviewed about why they made this decision. And the stories are just horrific. Women do not wake up in month six and say, you know, I think I just made the wrong decision. I think I'm going to have an abortion. But that's kind of how it feels in the media and when you hear these politicians talk about partial birth abortions. So can you briefly talk about what this actually means from a medical perspective?
Well, yes. And after having worked with Dr. George Tiller, who was my boss and just a wonderful mentor to me, I got to see on a daily basis the people he was able to serve from not only around the United States, but he literally saw women from all over the world. You know, people who in their sixth, seventh, eighth, you know, month of pregnancy, finding out that something had gone horribly wrong with their pregnancy. And what they had decided to do, that woman or the person with her family had decided that it was in their best interest to terminate the pregnancy. And, you know, after working with him to force a person to continue a pregnancy when you know that that pregnancy is non-viable or has already died in utero is nothing less than torture. And so preserving one's right and access to second and third trimester abortion is absolutely critical. And I'll tell you, after he provided abortions for people, the pictures then that they would send back of the babies and the children that they were able to have and that complete family that then they were able to achieve because they had been able to access abortion care.
Well, Julie, if you, or I'm sorry, Jennifer, you know, it might be really interesting for you to watch this documentary with your mom called After Tiller, and it's available online. You can find it just doing a search. Julie also mentioned that Planned Parenthood really stepped in when she didn't have insurance, and so many women who have lost jobs, for example, or work in jobs that don't provide insurance from all ages are able to access health care thanks to Planned Parenthood. And La Jidwa, here in California, Medi-Cal covers prenatal care and abortion, and low-cost family planning services are widely available. But as you've said, so many women struggle to access care. The Guttmacher Institute says 75% of abortion patients in 2014 were poor or low income. So just quickly, can you give us an overview of just how difficult it is for so many women to access care and the importance of a clinic like Planned Parenthood?
So most of my experience is in California, and in California alone, we can talk about the fact that there are service silos, Sacramento, San Francisco Bay Area, Los Angeles, and San Diego are the places where most of the services are available. If people need services and they live in the Central Valley, then they have limited to no access to services. And what we do at Access is both something as simple as helping them fill out their healthcare forms, because I speak English and I have a hard time with those forms. So then you have monolingual immigrants who have a hard time with the forms, and transportation issues. We help provide bus fare for people who need to come out and receive services. And as you mentioned, overnight stays. Some procedures are multiple day procedures. It's easy to think about. I've actually had friends say, "Well, why do you do abortion access work? We live in California. We think about California. We think about the Bay Area. We think about Los Angeles. We forget that the state is humongous. We forget that there's tons of people who don't have regular access to healthcare. And when rights are rolled back, or there's lower, there's less funding, they're the ones that get the most impact."
Yep. It's so true. La Jidwa, final thoughts. We've got about a minute left. What do you think is the most effective thing that people can do who want to get involved in this fight?
As I mentioned before, search your local fund, but also just have conversations about abortion. I think one of the things we forget when we talk about how we got this far is that even Democrats and liberals are shy about talking about abortion. And everyone knows someone who's had an abortion, and it shouldn't be a taboo topic. We should be able to talk about it freely because it is healthcare and it is important.
La Jidwa Salazar serves on the board of Access Women's Health Justice, an organization in Oakland that provides practical support to women on all aspects of reproductive justice. Julie Burkhart is founder and CEO of Trust Women. Dr. George Tiller used to say, "Trust women." He was assassinated by an anti-abortion extremist in his Wichita, Kansas church in 2009. And Trust Women is an organization that opens clinics providing care in underserved communities. La Jidwa and Julie, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about what we need to know about the Trump administration's trade war and tariffs. Your Call is produced here at KALW in San Francisco. Thanks to Laura Wenis for producing today's show, and Luis Hernandez, who is our intern. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.